All right, let's welcome back to the Misfit Nation our first return guest, Tyler Jeffcoat, the Seller's Accountant. How are you, Tyler?
Man, I am having a good day. Thank you, Rich. How about yourself, buddy?
I'm pretty good. I was glad to see when you guys reached out to come back on. I said that's a good sign saying we must be doing something right. And hopefully we had a good chat last time to bring you on and have you run back. I think it was only July last time we spoke.
Wow. Honestly, you guys have a great show here. This is a good high value show. I could see your listeners really getting a lot of impact, you know, and I've just had some new things kind of coming across my brain, you know, thinking through how to make money in this business. And honestly, just grateful that you'd have me on again today. Thanks, man.
Hey, no problem. Like I said, it was great having last time and to watch your dogs go through the season right now. I know you're a little excited and don't want to get too pumped right now. Listen, you never know what can happen the last couple, 2 weeks now, I guess you have left.
The plight of the Atlanta fan is that we're it's going to take a lot of reconditioning to get used to not blowing it. so the Braves helped us, right? Like my Braves helped us a couple weeks ago. We finally like, okay, wow, we don't have to lose every time. That's kind of cool, Rich. We don't have to lose every time. But I hate to say it, man. This is, and I live in Athens, guys. I'm close to UGA. I love the dogs. Was a double dog. But every week I'm like, oh boy, here we go. The other shoe's got to drop. So, you know, but you know, it is actually a fun season. It's fun to see your team when they're great, you know, that kind of thing.
And I think this season you guys have shown that you have the depth needed to go to full distance. In years past, you'd hit one rock and someone get hurt and then you were done. Now I've seen this year to reach back. You can reach back almost to the band right now and get them on the field and still beat teams.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't think it's a 5-star band, but it's pretty close. Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
They're about 2-3-star, but they're good. I mean, they get out there to trombone and do it. So that's good.
That's right. And remind me, who are you rooting for?
I'm Notre Dame.
Okay. Hey, you guys are kind of sitting in an interesting spot here also, right? Not that that's what this podcast is about, but you guys have a pretty good, interesting story here in the fall.
So. Yeah, we're kind of on that teeter line right now. Any miss up by us and we're gone. Any miss up by people ahead of us, we fall into luxury. So,
yes.
So we're hoping on the ladder, I guess, for people to fall and we can move forward. So I guess we'll get back into it. You want to speak about how business models inform your actual cash flow as you move forward with your business.
Yeah, definitely, Rich. So I had a question from a friend pop up about a month ago, Rich, which was why we reached out to you. And he was asking, here's what he was asking. What's the one metric, the one KPI, the one number I need to keep an eye on to really manage my e-commerce business well? And I was like, wow, what a great question. And so as I chewed on it, what I realized is that in the e-commerce space, which is where, you know, where I live in this sandbox, right? That's Amazon sellers and e-commerce brands. What you choose to measure and therefore aim for, it all depends on what your product strategy is. So, and remind me, Rich, how many of your listeners are selling products? Is it a pretty good mix of
some of those? It's probably about a 60-40.
Okay. So for those of you out there who are selling products, you might be familiar with kind of what's called a traditional arbitrage business, right? The guy goes and scans Nintendos at Walmart and he sells them for a higher price on eBay. That's kind of a traditional arbitrage business. But as soon as you move beyond that arbitrage business, you've got some options in terms of how much you invest in developing your brand. And I'll give you an example. One example is I buy someone else's product and I just put it in my box, slap my label on it and sell it on Amazon. That is a very different business model than I have developed a patented widget that does something super cool that no one else does. And I think that was the main thing I wanted to share with everyone is, and this really doesn't just end in e-commerce, but let me make the e-commerce point and then I'll broaden it. I got to understand how I deliver value to my customers. And so here's what that looks like in summary. If I'm a true direct-to-consumer business, like the one that has the patent and is kind of selling through a website and doesn't need Amazon or eBay to help them, then my job is to understand how to deploy my cash in such a way as to develop the right products, develop the long-term relationships to those customers, because the nice thing about owning the customer, let's say you can grab email addresses or something like that. The nice thing is that you actually can retarget those customers, right? You can send them an email and sell them something else down the line. That's a great business model. But the way you deploy your cash is going to be different in that model than if I'm just a pure arbitrage seller. All I'm doing is I'm grabbing something off of someone else's shelf and putting my label on it. And so I want to be careful not to get too much in the weeds, because you've kind of mixed audience in your podcast, but just know that the strategy is different. And here's the punchline. The only metric that matters doesn't change. It's the same regardless of which business model you have. And this is how this broadens out to, you know, Rich, your business or my business. I'm an accountant. I have an accounting firm. And what I'm learning is, and you're learning this from great CEOs like Warren Buffett. You hear that guy, old guy, lots of money, great investor. What has made Warren, he's popped up occasionally, right, Rich?
Right.
Yeah. What makes Warren Buffett great is that he knows how to take his precious pile of capital, whatever his resources are, and most effectively allocate them to the best projects, to the best acquisitions, to the best investments, to the best products, whatever it is. And so I think the point that I would want to give that kind of broadens out to all business owners out there is, listen, if we had infinite cash, then we should list a million products and have a million services and have a million employees, and there's no limit to what we can do. But that's not reality. In reality, we've got a finite amount of resources, time, energy, money, people, whatever that is. And our job as a CEO, our first and maybe most important job is to make those high-level strategic decisions about, for instance, to think about e-commerce again. I have 10 different products. Should I continue to list all 10 of them, or should I kill one of them? Right? That kind of question. Because guess what? I'm going to run out of cash if I invest in all 10 of them. I need to pick the best 9 or the best 8, the ones that are actually profitable, and only put my precious time, money, resources. So like you think about this for a lawn guy. If you got a guy that's out mowing people's lawns, he wants to only address the customers and the problems that he can get maximum return on his investment for. If I'm a real estate investor, I only want to invest my cash or my borrowed money into the properties that I believe are going to give me the biggest return on investment. And so I guess I'm kind of on a soapbox here recently, Rich, as I'm speaking at conferences and stuff. And admittedly, a lot of these conferences are kind of like e-commerce nerd conferences. Yeah. But I'm on this soapbox, which is you've got to understand what your return on investment is. And you can't do everything. And so you got to focus on the things that are going to make you money. Does that make sense?
Yes. You got to choose your aperture correctly when you're creating a business. You may start small, get bigger, and then have to realize you have to go back to an original diagram and how to do it right. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. You can't just keep growing without understanding where your aperture is.
Yep. And for me, like just to give a personal example, you know, Seller Accountant is a services business. We sell bookkeeping, right? We're services. I hire people. They do stuff for people, right? That kind of thing. But the problem is when you start a new business, you kind of like, you know, I'm like, Rich, I'll do your laundry. I'll shine your shoes. I'll mow your lawn. I'll do your grocery shopping and I'll do your bookkeeping. Just give me money, please. I'll do anything for you, right? But as you grow, you have to realize, oh gosh, I actually have to have a focused, defined offering to my customer. And it is kind of an emotional journey with your very first customers or your very first product that you developed to have to realize, oh boy, that may not be a winner at scale. There may be some tweaking or dialing in that needs to happen in order for that product to be a business and not just me doing my thing. Have you ever encountered that in your businesses?
Not in my business, but I've seen small businesses have to do that. And my friends go through those same hurdles, I like to call them, and either you make it over that hurdle or you fall backwards and try to figure out how to get back off your turtle shell and get back into the fight at that point.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a pretty natural, you're right though. I think for small businesses, there's a natural, probably part of the maturation or maturity process to say, my first step is to fight for revenue. Once I find revenue, I've got to actually build a dialed in product that allows me to, you know, hire other people to deliver the service. Or a great example of this, a really good friend of mine right now named Tim makes like custom woodwork. I mean, it's beautiful. It's so nice. He'll make a table. He'll make you a mantle. Like, you know, just think about how like just really high quality wood. And he's in a bit of a crossroads right now, Rich, trying to decide, do I want to just make a $10,000 table? Because I can only do a couple of these a month and I got to make a living and I got expenses. Or do I want to try to build some kind of a template that I could repeat that is a more scalable business? And he's such a gifted craftsman. He has such an eye for quality that he's really not sure what he wants to do. And either question, I mean, either answer could be good. The wrong answer is, I know what I'll do. I'll just charge the $1,000 per unit bill for the $10,000 table. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Today I tried a local business. A woman started a bagel business here in Clarksville. And, you know, we don't have bagels here in the South that much. They're fresh. And I had just come back from New York City this weekend and I didn't have any up there. So my daughter was pushing. We want bagels. And this thing popped up on my Facebook. I said, I'm going to try it out. It's local business. I messaged her, ordered my bagels. And right now, like she's hungry. So she wants to get the business going. So she met me to deliver it to me across town, met me in a parking lot. Never seen each other before. It's like doing a drug deal, but with bagels. And they're actually pretty good. And that's how she's going to grow her business. And once she gets it growing, then she can actually stop the running and just have it scale down to, hey, you come to me.
Yeah. It's such a great example. Yep. She's shining your shoes. She come to you, whatever you need. Right. She'll cook the bagel in your kitchen. You know, whatever you need, she'll do it for you right now. But you know, I guess you got to admire that. That's the hustle, man. That's that what you got to have to start that business and get it off the ground.
Definitely.
Well, you know, and I don't want to, again, I want to be careful not to get too technical here. But what are you saying? I'm just want to ask you, just turn around. By the way, when you host a podcast, because I've been on a bunch of these, it's really rare that the host, like you guys have a lot more value to add than your listeners realize. And you're like really good facilitators. Like, let me ask you this, what are you seeing in your world that's really transforming the way your entrepreneurs are thinking about leadership and mindset and whatnot?
I think a lot of it within the last year or so, like everyone seen the last year or so, the large hiccup was the big elephant in the room. And that's not Alabama. That's COVID that was in the room for the last year and a half. And that caused a lot of people had the dream of the brick and mortar store to go to the e-commerce store, to go to that. I'm selling outside the front of my house or out of my van in a parking lot. I'm selling these delicious bagels because I got to get something going to have revenue going. So it made people hungrier and more creative in their ability to create a business at that point. And that's what I've been seeing very, very frequently right now. Even in town here, a lot of people went to food trucks during the pandemic. And now they're trying to turn those food trucks, not just into a mobile food, but to have a brick and mortar to go alongside it.
Yep.
So it's a constant, evolution of businesses.
It's really cool though, because I think, you know, one of your big things is mindset, Rich, and like the entrepreneurs or the thinkers and doers out there who took the elephant in the room, you know, again, not Saban, but COVID-19, and asked the question, what does this crisis make possible for me? What does this change in the market make possible that may not have been possible before? And you're right. A lot of folks were like, okay, wow, it really sucks that the local restaurants are struggling right now, but I could sell bagels out of a van and this is an opportunity that I might be able to fill a gap. And it's kind of happened the same way with other e-commerce brands where they're like, wow, we're not walking into Walmart quite as much anymore or Target or whatever our local shop is. Oh, wow. I wonder if that means I could fulfill this need, because guess what? You know, it's funny that people that were like, I'm in my late 30s, people that were my age were buying stuff on Amazon anyway.
Right.
What's changed is that my dad, who's in his 60s, now he's buying stuff on Amazon more than he ever was before. And so the folks that were like, wait a second, the consumer momentum is being accelerated towards e-commerce. That cool idea I had to solve that problem. Like I had a friend that like was really hacked off that his like super fancy Yeti cooler, like didn't have an accessory, like the plug or the light or something broke on it. He just invented his own. Went and sourced it from China, built him a $1 million business, right? He's done a really great job. And so I guess that would be my encouragement to the listeners is if there's something that's bugging you that might be unusually easy to get to market right now because the world is kind of kooky still, man, this might be the right time to go for it and just try to see if you can design a product. You know, Amazon kind of makes it easy if you're looking to launch something from scratch. And I've had some friends that for less than $10,000 in upfront investment, we're able to build a brand that's kind of been able to run. And, you know, so anyway, I think that's the big thing for me is when the market shifts and it makes things hard, that's actually great news for entrepreneurs because it creates an opportunity to fix a problem that probably some behemoth company is already solving, but now they can't do it as well anymore, right?
Right. And then most times, like the behemoth company will see the smaller company growing and wind up buying their company because we don't want you to overtake us. That's so right. You're making out anyway in the end. Your brand is out there. Now Walmart has bought you out because they don't want that competition. Yeah. Or Amazon says, hey, why don't you come under our umbrella and we'll take care of everything for you. You just keep your face on it. Okay, that's good.
Boom. Yeah, we're seeing more of that. There's a lot of private equity. So private equity is like fancy speak for people in Wall Street that have money that want to invest it and don't know where to put that money. And there's been a big shift in the last year towards these, like you're kind of saying, almost these like mom and pop kind of brands where, right. You know, mom and pop might still be a $1 million business, but you might be shocked at how quickly you can build a $1 million company online, right? I mean, it's like can happen really quickly. And so a lot of this quote unquote really smart money, candidly, not all of it's as smart as they think they are, but they're really flooding in to buy these e-commerce and it's not even just e-commerce brands. Like if you have something else, maybe you have a content business where you're creating content, or maybe you have a fitness program you're delivering on or something like that, that gives you the ability to connect with your clients. The big money guys out there are kind of starting to see value in these different alternative business models. Kind of to what you said earlier, Rich, bricks and mortar, kind of yucky right now. We got to put this money somewhere. Ugh, where do we put it? Let's find something creative. And they're just getting more creative in being open to buying our kinds of companies, which is great for us. It means they pay more for our businesses, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's also helping a lot of even municipalities that were kind of struggling through the pandemic because they weren't doing much with like school buses or maintenance of the school buses. So a lot of these small businesses bought old school buses. Made them into food trucks.
Yeah.
So you're keeping it local anyway, and then expanding that local money, that local economy, just by driving street to street, selling whatever your wear is that day.
Man, what a great idea. Yeah. I can't imagine how many kind of dead and sitting in the parking lot school buses my county must have here in Georgia. I'm sure it's a bunch. So,
yeah, I mean, here we're short 100 drivers. So there's buses that have been sitting for almost a year.
It's incredible. Wow. Well, I mean, that was the main thing that I wanted to kind of share with everybody. Anything else you want to rip about here, Rich?
Do you have anything you want to show, like visuals or stuff like that? Or,
well, yeah. And again, I was...
I know you're a little hesitant. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not hesitant. I want to be respectful. If you want to enable it to where I can share, I'll just share a picture of two things really quickly. For those of you guys who are listening to this, please accept my sincere apologies. I've listened to podcasts before. I'm like, man, that is such a jerk thing to do to like... be the guy that says you got to look at this. But my point is just saying, if you're an e-commerce brand, the more you invest in owning the relationship with your customer, in other words, the further down this little chart you get, the more business valuation you have. So this is the kind of easiest way to look at it, is if I'm having to start a business on the cheap, I don't have a lot of money, then I may need to pick a simpler business model. And it may not have the biggest upside when I try to sell it in 3 years, but that might be okay. I need to build some cash. Maybe when I sell that first business, now I got a pile of money. Now I can invest in a more sophisticated product or more sophisticated brand where the upside is much larger. I can exit a lot higher. And so in the e-commerce world, we kind of identify these as different kinds of private label or brand ownership. Won't bore you with the details there. The last thing I would show you, again, if you're watching it, go to YouTube, by the way, check out Rich's YouTube channel to see this, is I just wanted to bring to everyone's attention that you got to manage your profitability. You have to know how much it's actually costing you to deliver your product or your service. You don't have to be an e-commerce seller, which are my clients. It doesn't matter. You might be an appliance repair guy. You might be a real estate guy. Whatever your business is, it's crucial that you take the time to put a name on every dollar in your business so that you can actually answer the question. You know, Rich were to see you out and about and he says, hey, Tyler, how much money did your business make last month? You ought to be able to look at your computer and in 5 minutes, give him an answer. And if you can't, then I just want to challenge you again, as the market gets weird, as things are kind of transitioning, it's the guys and gals who can execute and have their P's and Q's and everything else crossed and dotted and whatnot. Those are the people that are going to win and be successful. And so don't get sloppy on the details, and don't decide to forget about the money, because you got to keep an eye on your money so you can, you know, have a successful company.
Definitely. And you're even looking at that chart, you've seen Ryan and Amy both invested the same amount, had the same amount of upscale, and then only one made 100,000 more in the end of it. So, you know, one was doing something a little better at the end, in the long term, for that business to succeed.
Yeah, that's right. And for those of you guys who couldn't see it, you know, there was $2 million companies on the chart, but one of them was 50% more profitable, was a lot more profitable than the other one. And again, so this is what's funny, Rich. I don't know if you've ever found this, but you go to like a conference or a trade show, or even hang out with some buddies at a local bar or whatever it is. Everyone wants to talk about their revenue, right? You know, that's the sexy number.
Yes.
Did 100,000 in sales last year, or I did 50,000 in sales last month. But that's really BS. Like, that's really, what's the thing that I've always heard? It's like, sales is vanity, profit is sanity.
Right.
Right. And so just make sure as you're running your business, that you know two things. One, profit is way more important than sales. And two, everyone struggles with profit. Like, you probably feel like you're the little guy because you're not having a ton of profit. But guess what? 90% of the businesses out there look a lot like yours, and not like some mega profitable business that you're maybe imagining is out there. So just that just means don't give up. Keep trying to tweak your model. Keep trying to sharpen it and get better.
Outstanding. And how much do you think when someone starts their online business, how much do you think they should have their face on their social media marketing, or should it be their product?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the way I would answer that question is, there's two parts to it. One is, if you're going to sell something that's kind of commoditized, I have a friend that sells, you wouldn't believe, an ungodly amount of white paper bags every year. He sources them. They are a commoditized product, but he sells millions of dollars of these white paper bags. Having any kind of social media presence for him doesn't make a lot of sense. People aren't going to go to Instagram to learn about the different features of his white paper bags. Yeah, that's right. Here's the creamy white, you know, that kind of thing. You know, but if you have more of a lifestyle brand, like I've got a good friend that owns a camping, you think about like tents and like sleeping bags, all of a sudden having a really strong social media presence is crucial.
Right.
And then you got to have the decision. Okay, is this going to be a founder persona where I'm kind of the dude and now everyone associates my brand, like seller accountant equals Tyler? I mean, honestly, this is kind of one of the problems maybe you and I have, Rich, right? Is that we do shows like this where it's hard to separate our companies from our mugs, which, right, if you guys are looking at this, both of us are beautifully balding men that you're going to love, right? But the most scalable and valuable companies find ways to address their customers without the founder having to be the only persona, right? And so, you know, it's almost like your friend's bagel example a minute ago. It's probably you start doing it yourself and then try to find ways to pivot away from that as you grow and scale the business.
It's outstanding. That's the way I was thinking. That's what I mean, hear it from a smart person as well. Someone's on the other side of the fence. So that's good. I see a lot on all the social media networks with this. You know, you get ads based on what I look at during the day, I guess, because your phone tells them what to put on there. Big Brother's always watching. I mean, I walked by a generator on my street. I just looked at it, that's a cool generator. Next thing I know, I had 17 ads for generators on my phone, but none of them had a picture of a dude next to them. It just had the generator by me on it. So,
bro, we had the same thing happen. It's unbelievable how like creepily accurate those algorithms are, where it's like, I didn't even tell my wife that, but I was thinking about that product and all of a sudden it like pops up in my feed. I'm like, what the hell, man? How did that even happen? So yeah, it's a weird world, man.
Even just talking with my buddies at work about a new gun that came out, all of a sudden I'm getting every email for that gun. I was like, wow, how'd that happen?
Well, and then you get the mailer in your inbox, in your mailbox, and you're like, and they're mailing me stuff? Like, this is unbelievable. So,
you know, everything.
I know. Yeah, we don't want to think about that too much. We may get a little discouraged there, but yeah.
We might get some ads now from both of us of what we just talked about. So.
There we go. I love it. Well, buddy, so, anything else
again,
you want to chat about?
If you want to promote your website so people can get to you and actually hire you or get more advice from you personally, one-to-one, get it and let us know that.
Yeah, I'm more grateful for the opportunity, Rich. So seller accountant, as if I like sell things online, not like a basement, but like I'm a seller, S-E-L-L-E-R, selleraccountant.com. You can learn a lot about our services. I think if you're considering getting into some kind of an entrepreneurial venture online, we may be a good resource. We got a lot of free kind of tools and stuff on the website you're welcome to use. If there's anything I can do to serve you, let me know. And yeah, Rich, love getting to chat with you, buddy.
Awesome. And again, if you want to come on in the future again, you have another G-Wiz idea a month out, and you start talking to your buds, you want to come on, just give me a call, give me an email, and we'll get you on here.
Love it. Well, by the way, my buddies don't want to talk about this stuff. Like, they're like, what are you, like, you nerd? They're like, let's talk about football and have a beer. So like, you got to be careful, because I may take you up on that, because I'm the guy in the group that's like, let's talk about return on ad spend, you know, something like that. So, but as things pop up, I'll keep you posted here, buddy. All right.
All right. Any industry trends, that'd be good to come on to. So
good, pal. All right.
Awesome. Great having you on, and go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.